807 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings Wednesday style. By the way, announced it yesterday. The details are on the Facebook page, the website. They're on the Instagram. They're on the Twitter. Details on the latest chance for you to win big, and the biggest yet, almost $9,000 worth of our grand prize in the Go Play Outside contest. So many great things, and six different places to register to win. Details, we'll talk more about them, but they are, I mean, if you go online, you got to hide from them. I mean, they're on the website, on the Facebook page, on Twitter, on Instagram. Hey, and speaking of the website, too, online opinion poll question this morning off of the Democrat debate last night in Ohio. Which Democrat presidential candidate has the best chance at winning the 2020 election against President Trump? This the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Tell us who you think. Doesn't mean you think they'll beat him, but out of the ranks that you heard from last night, who has the best chance?
Yeah, who will put up the best fight?
And then you can, there's nowhere you put in, there's nowhere for me to make a note here about Tom Steyer and using the term frenemies.
No, well, I think it's pretty obvious that if Tom Steyer won the won the vote, that he would put up the biggest fight against Trump.
Well, let's get the take from our buddy Jeff Poor from Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and of course the host of the Jeff Poor Show in Huntsville on WVNN. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Did you have any, I was given pause about, 37 times last night during the Democrat debate, but the Tom Steyer using the term frenemies really stopped me, too. I mean, he's 62. I mean, I'm 47, and I know better than to use that.
It's very awkward. I guess it's not even really that woke, is it? It's like faux woke. So make of that what you will, but what limited amounts we saw of Tom Steyer, I don't think he broke through really at all.
Yeah, it was interesting last night. Of course, Elizabeth Warren knew she was going to be, the target because she's the front runner. How do you think she handled that last night? Was it a neutral, a loss, or a win?
Neutral, but that's all she needed, right? I guess I would say probably a win in that we saw her have to handle that sort of adversity, and I didn't think she handled it. I don't think she had a big night or by any means, but she didn't fold. She didn't fold in the way Biden did in that first debate when they all went after him. I think she kind of stood there, took the punches, and if she could do that, and she could play like Floyd Mayweather or whatever, and just kind of rope-a-dope and hang out there, that she's going to be the nominee.
Did it feel to you, Jeff, just your opinion, some of these candidates that are up there that at this point have no chance at winning but were hitting at Elizabeth Warren seemed like they were teaming up almost on behalf of Joe Biden? Were they doing it on his behalf going after Warren, or were they doing it just to prop their own campaign up a little bit longer?
I think they're propping their own campaign up, and here's why I think that. I think that somebody's looking to take Biden's place. There's a Biden lane, if you will. Biden doesn't look like he just wasn't quite ready, prepared, just looked out of it. And if he should go by the wayside, then who would assume that role in that Biden lane? Would it be Klobuchar? Would it be Mayor Pete? I think those are the two right now I would keep an eye on. They're trying to take the Joe Biden moderate mantle away on that debate stage, and that's what it looked like in some ways to me, that they were lining themselves up to be in that role.
Yeah, there's some, and I'm trying to gauge that. There's some value, obviously, in picking a lane and playing to that. But in this the suite of Democrats we have right now, it's obviously moved far left. The moderate lane, I guess that's the Biden lane, the moderate lane. It's like we're going to take money, but we're not take as much money or something like that. I mean, it's a little bit of small defenses of capitalism, limited capitalism seem to maybe put you in the Biden lane.
Right. I guess the biggest show of that was when they had a discussion about Elizabeth Warren's health care plan, Medicare for all. That and then how your taxes would go up, and whether or not they would go up or not. Bernie Sanders owned it. And that's the socialist position. Yes, but you would save money on premiums, you would save money on everything else, pharmaceutical costs, etc. Elizabeth Warren not quite there when she wanted to talk about how much it would cost the middle class when it comes to a tax hike. I think that was kind of a that was the difference, and that's when you are willing to point that out, that puts you in that moderate lane.
It became pretty clear last night why Hunter Biden had that sit-down interview with ABC News earlier in the day, completely unbeknownst to the Joe Biden campaign. They had no idea he was going to do that, but it made it easy for Biden to kind of duck questions last night by saying, I think my son answered it in his own words earlier today. Did you think he did a good job answering or deflecting those questions about Ukraine last night?
No, and that was one of his weakest points of the night. He had many weak points of the night, but it was incoherent. It didn't seem very prepared. They set him up perfectly, like you said, having that interview on Good Morning America, World News Tonight before the debate, and having those clips out there was the smart play. But did he take the ball and run with it? No, he just kind of dropped it and fell down. I thought that that could have been handled much, much better.
There are a lot of commonalities against guns, but there's some variance in that. Therefore, coming for your money because government knows better. But another thing, obviously, impeachment of President Trump. With those on the stage last night all calling for the impeachment of the president, any motivator here for Speaker Pelosi to call for a vote? Are we still not doing that? What's the story?
Now, she doesn't want to have the vote yet. She wants to drag this out for a while, I think. Here's the problem, Bill. I just don't think when we get to Iowa, when we get to New Hampshire, that's a couple of months away, but it's right around the corner, this is really a winning ticket for Democrats. It may be a winning ticket if you're running for the California primary, the New York primary, even Vermont or something, but in the early primary states, which tend to be more purple than the others, and they do that on purpose, that is not, I don't think, is a winning message that we're the impeachment party. So I think they'll drag it out as long as they need to. She went right before the debate last night. Pelosi goes to the mic and says that there's not going to be a vote yet. So they're still in the inquiry phase. They're doing it in the intelligence committee, and we can get into that if you want, but I think that they're going to stall it out, and I don't think, I just think when it comes to presidential politics, at some point, something will have to give.
And Jeff, I'm seeing this from Keith over on our Twitter feed. Now, Keith, a vet as well, like Tulsi Gabbard, he said, your opinion on how Tulsi Gabbard did and why they give her so little time to speak.
Well, the problem with Tulsi Gabbard is she's only at, single digits in the polls. She's not going to be the nominee. That's it. That was probably the last time we will see her on a debate stage. However, the thing about Tulsi Gabbard, she's kind of the Gabbard and Yank are the two favorite Democrats for Republicans.
Yeah.
And for all the reasons. So, if you're a Republican voting in the Democratic primary, yeah, but this is a primary for Democrats, and they're not going to give equal time to somebody that's polling and not fundraising like the other heavy hitters.
It's interesting. I mean, the youngest on the stage seemed to be the grown-up in the room on several issues. I mean, even things that I might be disagreeing with Tulsi Gabbard on, her responses were measured. I mean, you compare to everybody over 70 there, and then you got 36-year-old Tulsi Gabbard, and she seemed to be the elder.
Well, she's in the Ron Paul lane, I think, on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. It's not, I wouldn't say it's an isolationist policy like a Pat Buchanan, but I do think it's a way more judicious than the rest of the Democrats up there. The thing is, the Democratic Party used to be the anti-war party.
Yep.
And they used it in 2006 to win the House and Senate back, but they've kind of gotten away from that. They got away from it during the Obama years, certainly with Libya. But now, if you're one of these hippie Democrat types, you go back as far back as the Vietnam era, where the Democrats really won their stripes, were able to capitalize on that. I mean, that's not what they are anymore. They're kind of the party of big government is going to be pro-intervention at some point ideologically. She's probably more of a throwback to the we don't need to be in these foreign entanglements, but that is becoming something that really is more of a Republican policy these days.
Yeah, I mean, it is. That's something that, well, it's part of the Republicans, right? I mean, Republicans under Trump, it's the Rand Paul side as well as Ron Paul, but it is different than the obviously neocon side in the Republicans, which right now have been sent packing.
I mean, if you want to look at it, you want to kind of dissect the policy. I think it's different than the we need to go into Iraq. We need to find an excuse to go into Iraq, and you know all the different reasons. The whole thing with northern Syria is to keep the Turks from coming in and going after the Kurds, who were our allies through the Iraq ordeals, going back as far as the 1990s. So I get that. That's the policy. You can make that argument, but it's a far cry. I think the neocon movement, as far as being a big player in American politics, probably died in that 2006 midterm.
All right, coming right back. More with Jeff Poor. Bring it back home to Alabama. Well, people that would like to go to Washington, the Alabama Senate race. Fundraising numbers are in. We'll run through that with Jeff when we return right here on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Day 23, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. By the way, coming up in the second half of this hour, gotten that discussion because California passed a law that lets people keep roadkill. We kind of discussed the nuance of the Alabama law. Instead of just guessing on stuff, we have representatives from DCNR and Montgomery coming on to talk more about that at 8:35. We continue our conversation with our buddy Jeff Poor from Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, WVNN, and the Jeff Poor Show. And the numbers are in for campaign contributions for those who would be our next senator on the Republican side. Talk about it, Jeff.
Yeah, so Bradley Byrd won the fundraising fight in the third quarter. Merrill deposited the most money because he took out a $250,000 bank loan. So it's all neck and neck. It's not, and I would say in third place or second place, there was some discrepancy yesterday as to whether or not Merrill was the leading fundraiser. It turned out today it filled out the forms wrong. But Byrne is number one, and then Tuberville, two, and then narrowly third is John Merrill. I think my biggest takeaway now, Merrill had strong numbers, but not as strong as we had initially thought. But I can't figure out why Tommy Tuberville isn't doing better, given he has such a front-runner lead, and I guess the smart money is not convinced that he's here to stay.
That is an interesting year. So we're watching two things. We'll watch polling, and this has always been a good measure. Polling for, you know, whether you look at the Alabama Farmers Federation vote or polling out there for Tuberville that's looked good. But if you can't raise money, I mean, that's a poll into itself, right? I mean, it's a different poll with different measures in it, but it's a poll into itself.
Right, and it's more like a Las Vegas gambling sort of indicator. You know, when people go bet on Alabama, then what happens to the point spread or things of that nature? Well, even though Tommy Tuberville's got the number one ranking, he's topping the polls, the smart money just isn't really ready to bet on Tuberville as the clear front runner. You know, the idea is that when you give money to a campaign, some people give for the right reasons. It's altruistic. They think that this will be a good thing in Washington. A lot of other people give to campaigns because they think, hey, you know, maybe someday I need to call in a favor. I need some help with something, or I need to get something in some legislation. I need to help my cause. That is what happens, especially when you're looking at Tommy Tuberville. You could get into, you could buy cheap right now, I think. You could write a big check, and then maybe someday he'll remember how you helped his campaign. I think that is the bet the farmers have made, and it may pay off, it may not. I think right now it looks like a pretty solid bet, but a lot of people aren't as convinced as I am.
All right. So I want to go back to something you talked about, John Merrill, getting that loan. So people understand this, too, because Tuberville loaned his campaign money. I mean, that's not out of the ordinary.
No, not at all. I mean, Bradley Byrne, Tommy Tuberville's, you know, loaned his campaign a bunch of money, $1 million. Now, will he ever touch that? It remains to be seen. But it helps having that big cash on hand number to show the health of the campaign. And if it gets down to the nitty gritty where it is tight and it looks like there's a possibility Tuberville can win, then he can tap into that reserve fund. I think the hope is that he doesn't have to. Now, keep in mind, there's some other things going on here. A lot of this money is all combined into one lump sum. Some people, you have you want to look at the number of donors. We don't really have that yet. We have to get into the more complicated form, but a lot of donors will give to the primary runoff and the general election, so they max out, as they say, for this quarter, whereas Bradley Byrne or Tommy Tuberville or whoever can only tap into the money given to the primary to use it for the primary, but it all adds up together to give you one big lump sum. So there's that is a big part of it. Some of the money cannot be used that has been donated to these campaigns until that phase of it, that particular election cycle.
Jeff, what do you think the big Republican players nationally and in D.C., what do you think they're hoping for from the Republicans in this Senate race, and what do you think they're seeing right now?
I think a lot of Republicans in Washington, D.C. were hoping Jeff Sessions would get in to this race. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of buzz about that in the last week. Steve Flowers, a columnist known in circles in Alabama for years and years, he was telling, I had heard the same thing, but he came on my radio show and said that he had heard Jeff Sessions had a poll in the field to gauge interest. Here's something, and this is probably, I think it's out there well enough that I can say it, that there was an alpha poll you may have heard about that showed Tuberville as the leader, and that's kind of was the basis for the alpha endorsement for a lot of the farmers and a lot of the counties. Well, they put Jeff Sessions in one of their polls, and with the current field, Tommy Tuberville still comes out ahead of Jeff Sessions. So think about that.
Whoa, I would have lost that one if you'd have given me that that vote.
Yeah, and Jeff Sessions, what I heard was he was underwater with a lot of Republican voters. The Donald Trump stuff really has hurt him in this state. That doesn't mean that if he got in a situation where there was a Tommy Tuberville, Jeff Sessions runoff, that Jeff Sessions wouldn't emerge as the victor. But I would say this, if Jeff Sessions isn't showing like a 20-point lead and this is a walk in the park, I don't think he comes to play. But I would say, back to your original question, Dalton, that I think a lot of people were kind of hoping Jeff Sessions would take a look at this race.
Who does Secretary of State John Merrill hurt the most out of Tuberville and Byrne?
Probably Tuberville. Well, Byrne tends to be the more the business community guy. I think Merrill is playing for that lane. He's trying to be that guy. I mean, look at his position on immigration, mm-hmm. talking about comprehensive immigration reform. Byrne tends to, I think, maybe not stylistically or policy-wise, but there is sort of a comfort level with a lot of people in the business community with Bradley Byrne. On the other hand, the sort of flashy kind of, politician, it tends to sway toward more Tuberville, where it's kind of more of a showboatsmanship, if you know what I mean. And I think in a culture where we're everything's so aesthetics and what we think about, you know, everything's so superficial, maybe in some ways it hurts Tuberville as well.
Just about 35 seconds left here. Doug Jones raised, 77% from out of state in third quarter?
Yeah, and he'll be formidable in the general election. I just think that with Donald Trump on the ballot, it's going to be tough, but their hope is that Trump has a stumble along the way that depresses turnout, and then they can at least play against whoever the Republican nominee is.
All right, if people want to listen to you, read your work, where do they go?
It's Jeff. It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
And always a pleasure. We'll check back soon.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
It's Jeff Poor, and we're coming right back. We're getting some text about this and questions here. This started with a discussion this morning, California passing a law that doesn't take place for 3 years, letting their people keep roadkill, like, in all situations. We talked about the Alabama law. Instead of just guessing on what exactly the law means, we'll take you to Montgomery and talk to one of the division chiefs up there and get the details coming up next. Y'all stay close.
It's 8:36 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings, and it's time to head to McConnell Automotive. Talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. Good morning, buddy.
Let's talk deals, and with it being October, you've got some great October deals out there on the lot at McConnell Automotive. Tell us what's going on.
Well, Dalton, everybody loves to save money if they're out there shopping, so I think the most exciting thing we have going on right now is the lowest number you can get in interest rate is zero, last time I checked. And so, buddy, we've got 0% interest on Yukon XL, and on the new Sierra truck that everybody's knocking the doors down to come and take a look at with the parts and tailgate. And so people just need to go to our website, man, do it on their phone, McConnellAutomotive.com. They'll see that. And Don, every SUV we have has a percent off play. So, for example, the Buick Encore, it sticks around $25,000. You get 20% off that, 14% off the Buick Encore, 16% off an Acadia. So it's just a great time if people are in the market for an SUV. Man, it's easy math. You just pick your vehicle. You don't have to negotiate, get a huge discount. And these October deals, I think, really is the biggest discounts we've had all year, man.
Man, that is some great stuff. Got to get out to McConnell Automotive to catch those deals. We appreciate it, Mitch.
Y'all have a great Wednesday, Dalton.
You too. Check out the website, McConnellAutomotive.com, or go see them in person on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
All right, 8:38, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. So we were talking about it last hour, and it was California passed a law, made national news. I mean, interesting to me, they pass a law that doesn't go in effect till 2021, I think.
I think 2022. So
2020, yeah, you're right.
Even longer.
They were talking about now having California residents being able to keep roadkill. Their angle on this was getting those critters out of the road. Now, in California, not just deer, they mentioned elk and antelope and others, getting those out of the road for safety on the roadway. So mm-hmm. The motivation is somebody hits the critter, they get to keep the critter, so it's out of the roadway. Okay, and then we started talking about the state of Alabama. I've kept a roadkill deer before. We had a gajillion text about this on the text line. And then we started getting into looking at the code for the state of Alabama and what is legal and what is not legal. And the best way to figure that out is go to the people that know. And Section Chief with Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Matt Weathers, joins us this morning. Thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for having me on this morning.
We're talking, and I want to point out to folks, as soon as we use the term roadkill, everybody thinks an armadillo or a raccoon that's bloated up like a basketball on the side of the road. We're probably talking a little more fresh roadkill.
Sure, yeah. Well, we certainly wouldn't advocate eating armadillo or anything like that,
right.
But to each his own, I suppose. Speaking of deer specifically and codes that would cover our game animals, and really what you have to concern yourself with is that it's unlawful to possess a game animal outside of the legal season for that animal. So that would be, that's the law covering it. From our standpoint, if it hasn't been hunted, if it's something that you mentioned seeing someone in front of you strike it with a car and kill the animal, as long as someone contacts one of our local district offices or if they're in contact with their local officer, if it's during a closed season, we have no problem with that. If the animal has already expired, then there's no threat to the resource. Really, why let that go to waste? If it's safe to consume, it's as simple as contacting one of our officers.
Okay, so I want to get back into that process and how they would do it. But like right now, okay, as of yesterday, bow season is in for deer in the state of Alabama, so archery's in. And so people are now in legal season, so let's talk about that. Somebody hits a deer now during legal season, they can keep it without calling, or what is the law?
Yeah, that's correct. Right now, it's lawful to possess a game animal. You know, it's during deer season, so you can have one in possession. If it's dead, you can't possess a live game animal at any time of the year. But if it's dead, you can have it. So there's really no reason to call right now. One of the common questions we get is, if I hit this buck deer, does it count towards my bag limit
that,
for the year?
You picked my question. I was about to ask, do I have to game check?
We get that, and no, it's not hunted. Okay. Striking it with your truck is entirely different than going to the hunting club and putting 3 months in to kill this thing. So no, it doesn't have to be recorded on your harvest record. It is not one of the deer that you have killed while hunting, so to speak.
All right, so I'm not sitting there by the side of the road and game checking.
No reason to do that.
All right. What about a little nuanced situation here, Matt? But, okay, somebody hits a deer, and this question came in earlier, and the deer is not going to make it, but it's not dead yet.
Yeah. Yeah, we get that pretty often, and typically you want to contact one of our officers to put that animal down. But if it's a remote location, if our guys just can't get there, we don't want the animal suffering. So we do encourage the public to do that. And as long as we know about it, that's absolutely fine. The worst thing that would happen is someone in the public see this and give us a call. If we already know about it, then that's half the battle. The thing to keep in mind is make sure these animals are dispatched in a safe, humane way. If it's inside city limits, there may be other laws that you're violating, like discharge of firearm in city limits, where your local police officer, sheriff's deputy, or game warden have some leeway in being able to do that. So as long as it's done in a lawful manner, common sense says don't let the animal suffer.
Good. I like to hear that. What about just take it on and talk about a couple other things critter wise? Although the number of wild hogs I've ever seen hit on the road is, I don't know that I, maybe one or two ever, but with hogs, being year round, depending on the landowner. What about a situation where somebody hits a hog?
Yeah, if there's no closed season on it, then there's really no reason to notify us of that. So yes, and you are right. That's pretty unusual. I think even thinking back about our officers, I think I've had one instance of our officers striking a wild hog while on duty. So it's pretty unusual. They stay away from roadways very often. So, but yeah, if there's no closed season on it, there's really no reason to contact us.
All right, and a couple other questions here coming in. Well, other animals in the state, and I was looking at the code, and it said, obviously, federally protected species, so somebody hits, you can't possess that. I mean, it all seems to be about the possession, right? I mean,
it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
So if you could legally keep that animal during that period of time, then that's your green light.
That's correct. Yeah, we'll get questions pretty commonly at our offices. I've seen a hawk hit on the side of the road, and it's really pretty. I'd like to keep the feathers, or an owl or something like that. Any kind of raptor, anything that is federally protected, you can't have any part or piece of it. So just leave those where they are. And if they are injured, certainly give us a call. There are raptor rehab centers in the state that can come out and pick those things up and rehab them. But if it's dead, just leave it where it is, because you cannot possess any part of it.
This is a question, too, going back to it's season right now. We talked about it because it's archery season. Somebody can keep a deer. Does somebody have to have a hunting license to do that?
No, they don't. If it's been struck by a vehicle, it's nothing connected with the act of hunting.
All right, so that was one of the big questions.
They probably do need a driver's license, though.
Yeah, they
they would need that.
Well, if they're driving a car, most likely.
This question goes off into something that we've talked about on the show. We'll talk about in the future as well. But Elliot asking, what effect does CWD have on this? Now, we don't have CWD in our state right now, thank goodness.
That's correct, yeah. Now, we do take CWD samples from road-hit deer, road-killed deer across the state. But like you say, we don't have it at current time, so there's really no effect on that at this point for us.
All right, and let's talk about, too, because I was in the discussion earlier and somebody brought it up with us, and I seconded how great a program Hunters Helping the Hungry is. What about that? I mean, if somebody, could you have a fresh roadkill deer donated that way? And also talk about how Hunters now, starting from now through February 10th, can help out.
Yeah, well, the Hunters Helping the Hungry program, they don't take roadkill deer. They are literally hunted deer. So we have, you can go to our website, www.outdooralabama.com, and you can look up the Hunters Helping the Hungry program, and there's a list of participating processors across the state. We'll say, for instance, your hunting club, you've got a good number of does that you've got to remove to get your buck doe ratio where you want it, more than the freezer can hold. Mm-hmm. So that's a great outlet for that. So you kill that doe and you can take it to one of those participating processors, and there's a donation form that takes your information, where it came from. That processor, he processes the deer. It's ground venison, and local soup kitchens, charitable organizations, they will take control of that meat, and our agency pays that processor $1 per pound, and it goes to people who are in need. It is an excellent program. It's been going on, this year's its 20th year.
And I love it. I mean, I love the program for the reasons you talked about, and reminding folks, we're helping people here at home in Alabama. When you do this, that resource is going to help those neighbors, those people in your community.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an excellent example of our community, the hunters, the sportsmen in the state, helping people beyond just themselves. It's an absolutely great program, and in its 20th year again, so very successful.
All right, one last one here. We mentioned at the beginning, if it is out of deer season, for example, or out of season for that animal, somebody hits it, the process, once again, who do they need to call?
Contact their local district office. You can go to outdooralabama.com, as I mentioned earlier, and there's contact information for each of the district offices. And then our individual officers are very good about giving out their state-issued phone numbers to everybody, so I highly encourage knowing your local officer and keeping them on their cell phone. It's as simple as just calling one of those guys and letting them know what happened, so that if we get any reports from the public about somebody picking up a deer or killing the deer, then we already know about it.
And thank you for your time this morning. Thanks for the heads up on this.
Absolutely. I appreciate you letting us come on.
All right. It's Section Chief with Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Matt Weathers. Hopefully we answered those tons of questions we had on the text line, and we'll talk to you when we get back. Phone number 343-0106. We continue on. It's Mobile Mornings, FM Talk 106.5. At 8:54 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming up on Midday Mobile today, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. We just talked about fundraising amounts. He's going to join us at noon. He'll be on from noon to 12:30. Also, we will delve into a five-hour Mobile City Council meeting yesterday.
I hope they got an intermission.
Yeah, do they take a break? I don't know how they do that, if they call for intermission or not. In that meeting, some of the things we're waiting to hear is with the lawsuit, what would be going on with the lawsuit. You have a situation where Wanda Cochran saying she can't represent the entirety of the council because there's a split. Some council members want to work with the mayor's office, some don't. So now they've got to split that. We'll talk about that. Also, will there be a official Mobile City Council president? You know, LaVon Manzi has been acting president for, I guess it's 2 years, right? We're right at 2 years.
It's been a long time.
So he's been, will be official. One of the things I was hearing yesterday, that they would codify, and it would be LaVon Manzi as City Council president and Councilman C.J. Small as vice president, which I don't know how big a deal vice president is, but it's that would be the situation. We'll see how that may go in the next vote. And, of course, the question is the budget.
Mm-hmm.
5 hours of meeting yesterday, but we'll get into that coming up in the midday show.
Yeah, and, of course, they went ahead and followed through on that new deal with Carnival, which means the cruise line will still be here for another 3 years, but still working on the rest of the budget, I reckon.
Yes. Well, I mean, and that comes down to one of the questions, the way I've understood this, is that some members are saying they can't vote on the budget, because in voting on the budget, they would be affecting the lawsuit over the non-merit employees from the mayor's office. They believe that when you vote the budget through and it has funding for those employees, then you're lessening your case that the mayor's office doesn't have a right to do that. Of course, Councilman John Williams came in last week, and he said, you just have amendments here. And they had a bunch of amendments they were talking about yesterday, and you could do this with amendments. So it's, it's convoluted. It's the Gordian knot, and we'll try to unravel at least some portion of it during the midday show today.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Also, we'll go back and review a little bit more from last night's Democrat debate. And remember, Dr. Bill says rain and cooler air on the way. Rain should be starting in the next hour or so around here, and then the cooler air coming in. We get lows down in the 50s.
He said maybe even in the 40s.
Yeah, in the upper reaches. So he's talking about the icebox of Mobile County. Mm-hmm. Mount Vernon. What's up, Mount Vernon? Bay Minette, maybe getting into that in North Baldwin, or up at Chrysler or Blackshear or somewhere like that in North Baldwin. Maybe seeing the 40s. It's about time. I mean, we're halfway through the month of October.
So. We were due.
You're darn right, we were due. And also a reminder, we've shared this picture on our social media platforms, and I will continue to do that. That Amber Alert is well beyond our state, multi-state now. They have two suspects in custody in Birmingham, but still no sign of Camille Cupcake McKinney, the three-year-old little girl who was kidnapped from a front yard in Birmingham on Saturday. She's now been missing for 4 days. There's, from that presser yesterday with Birmingham police, it's gut-wrenching to hear some of the suspects they got and the kind of pictures he had on his phone. And
Yeah, they have two persons of interest in custody, Patrick Stallworth and Derek Brown. And you mentioned the child pornography that Stallworth had on his phone, so he was arrested for that. And the woman that was arrested, Derek Brown, was already on probation for a previous kidnapping.
She kidnapped her own children,
Her own children, that's right. She, I guess, lost custody and went and kidnapped her own children. But
and you heard them talking about the other... This is the other thing that scared... It's like there's several other people they're looking for in connection with this. Like it's a group or... I mean, you had to kind of read between the lines during the presser yesterday, but it was... It's very, very scary. So, I mean, that the picture of that three-year-old little girl, share that picture. Make sure that everybody who, you know, can sees it, and maybe somebody's seen them somewhere at a gas station walking around. I don't know where, but you got to hope that just all of us together all over this country can share that picture, and she'll be found safely. All right, more details on that as well coming up at noon today for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher on the way next. Remember, all the details on our Go Play Outside contest, find them on our Facebook page, our website, Instagram page, Twitter page, TikTok.
We're working on TikTok.
We don't have TikTok. Okay.